You're listening to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for October 15th, 2008. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob Westervelt. In this edition, we'll talk about Oracle's latest round of patches with Amichai Schulman. Schulman joins us from Imperva. Oracle released 36 patches this week.
Taking a first look at it, most of them, at least with respect to database, are standard SQL injection vulnerabilities in packages.
Also, Sean Klein of RSA joins us to talk about the results of a recent security survey. Apparently, many end users are getting around security policies, putting data at risk.
So I think what's happening here is that we have a bit of a tug of war between policy to employees who have to get their job done.
Up next, Oracle patches, but first, this message.
When it comes to analyzing a network, protecting enterprise data, or fighting malware, you can plop down thousands of dollars for a commercial product, or you can get tons of great functionality from a free tool. Let CertSecurity.com show you how some of the industry's best free and open source tools work in our exclusive screencast series. Each month, one of CertSecurity.com's best experts will offer a step-by-step video presentation showing you how to use the most powerful tools and software, including Nessus, Snort, UTM, and so much more. And it's all free. Don't wait. Watch and learn today. Visit CertSecurity.com/screencast. That's CertSecurity.com/screencast.
And we're back. Oracle released 36 fixes addressing flaws in its database, middleware, and application products. Giving us a brief overview today is Amichai Schulman. He is Chief Technology Officer and founder of patching vendor Imperva. He and his research team is credited with two of the vulnerabilities in this quarter's critical patch update.
Comparing to the previous one, it's not one of the largest. Taking a first look at it, most of them, at least with respect to database, are the standard SQL injection vulnerabilities in packages.
And what exactly does that mean? I mean, is it they're not as threatening?
No, they are. They are indeed threatening. And again, while their CVSS score is not that high, I do think that they are actually more threatening that their score suggests. But we have seen them, you know, in each and every patch for the past 3 years. In fact, looking at some of them, there is a vulnerability in the DBMS CDC publish package and another one in the CDC iPublish package. And these packages have been patched over and over again at least three times in the past 2 years. These are vulnerabilities in the same packages that have been demonstrating vulnerabilities for the past years.
The iPublish packages were given a base score of 5.5.
Yeah, as much the same as the publish one. I don't know how familiar are you with the CVSS scoring system, but it has a tendency of pushing the scores towards the lower end of the range. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you need to authenticate in order to exploit the vulnerability, it immediately reduces the score to something around 7. Then if the effect is not, by definition, full breach of confidentiality, integrity, and availability, again, the score is pushed down towards 6 or 5, which is what we see here. Although partial plus is something that is used by Oracle to actually say that you can do anything you want with the database, but it's still not full control.
If looking at all of these vulnerabilities in the database, only one of them can be remotely exploited without authentication.
Actually, I'm very familiar with this one. It's the vulnerability that I reported to Oracle almost 3 years ago.
So this one is the core in the core database management system.
Exactly.
And can you explain it?
Unlike the others, it's not a vulnerability that can be exploited using SQL. It's actually a vulnerability that exploits the network protocol between the Oracle client software and the Oracle server. And it abuses a mechanism called proxy accounts in the database server. Oracle used to promote this type of feature a few years ago for a three-tier environment in which the application server actually creates an authenticated session with the database server, and then application users have their own sub-session on top of this session, and they do not need a password in order to create their own sub-session within this session, because it assumes that the application requires authentication. Now, what I have found out is that in an environment that uses this type of configuration, an attacker can actually create a new session with the database without going through authentication.
And essentially gain partial control?
And essentially gain partial control over the database. I do agree with them about the high complexity of exploiting this attack. It requires both the environment to support proxy authentication, and it requires some brute force work over session numbers. But the end, if you do succeed, you do get access to the database server without going through authentication.
And when was this discovered? You said 3 years ago?
Almost 3 years ago. We reported it to Oracle on December 2005.
Are there any here that really stand out, other than that one, that you think more people probably have implementations of, maybe less technical to pull off?
I'm sure that all those I've mentioned earlier, the SQL injection with the stored procedures, mm-hmm. you know, most databases out there are exposed to them. These are default built-in packages. Some of them are you know, accessible to the public role out of the box. So I definitely think that most deployments are affected by those.
Are you familiar at all with the BEA product line? Because there is a problem with the WebLogic server plugins for Apache that.
So yeah, this one actually had its own emergency patch a while ago. What happened here, and this is something that we have started to see from the beginning of 2008, there were a number of zero-day vulnerabilities that were published on the net before an Oracle patch was available. One of them was this vulnerability, and as far as I remember, it's a buffer overflow vulnerability. I think it was a buffer overflow vulnerability. Oracle had to issue an emergency patch for this product outside their normal patching cycle. Now, a number of researchers commented that if Oracle were available to produce this patch so quickly, why can't they do that with all the vulnerabilities that are reported to them. And I tend to disagree with that. I think that being cautious with producing patches is a good practice. Again, especially if you want DBAs to deploy them safely.
Up next, end users are getting enough education, but many are being forced to work around strict security policies in order to get their job done. That was the finding of a recent survey of more than 400 IT and business executives conducted by RSA, the security division of EMC. Sean Klein of RSA is joining us to talk about it. Sean, thanks for being with us.
The interesting part of this, I guess the overall takeaway, I mean, the vast majority of those surveyed said that they're familiar with IT security policies, but they're still doing things that are probably contrary to most security policies. So, you know, in general terms, before we get into the nitty-gritty, what's really happening here, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point. So I think what's happening here is that we have a bit of a tug of war between policy, which is driven oftentimes from regulation and lawyers and whatnot, and which then gets eventually flowed through to controls, whether those are IT controls or physical controls, to employees who have to get their job done. And they're incented to do things for the business, for the customer, and there's a natural tug of war there. I think that part of the issue is that there is a natural trade-off between security and total cost of ownership and ease of use, if you listen to the Gartner frameworks, and certainly that's how we view the world as well. And when you don't have a good balance between these things for particular populations of an organization, there's going to be a disharmony, and you know, they're going to try to resolve that and getting their job done by going around security. So I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, half of those employees said that you surveyed said that they need to work around the company's established security policies. So there's this struggle, and nobody's seen. Are there any best practices around this struggle?
Yeah, there are actually. So ISO has some standards about information-centric security, and it gives a framework to actually go through and understand where you are in the maturity of your security. It's ISO 27002, I believe, is the standard.
Let's talk about one of the areas. And sure. I saw here in the survey 48% of those overall surveyed, and 60% of those based in the U.S. Said that they frequently leave their business carrying sensitive information. And that could be anything from business plans to even credit card data. I thought that companies are starting to set policies prohibiting that, obviously. Why aren't companies then using encryption even for essential employees rather than, you know, a blanket encryption?
Well, okay, so perfect. That's a great question. So the issue is that one of the other pressures on the world is productivity. And we're seeing companies lay off employees. We're seeing increased competition, globalization. And this is fueling the employee mobility trend. And so companies are encouraging their employees to actually leave the premise with sensitive information. The trick is, how do you put appropriate security controls in place such that that's safe? And to answer your question specifically around encryption, we are seeing that as a bit of a trend. So this notion of the secure remote user who needs to not only VPN into their company because there's certain data that they can't carry out with them, but they also have sensitive information on their device. And so, for example, we have, sorry to talk about products, but just as an example, we have something called the SecureID 800, which is a one-time password device, two-factor hardware authentication, with a smart chip on it as well to hold certificates to do full disk encryption and unencryption. Mm-hmm. So we do see these types of use cases, and it really comes down to, again, that trade-off between cost and ease of use and security. And there are companies who are doing that, and there are others who are perhaps not educated. They don't necessarily know how possible that is. They're perhaps not as mature in setting up a PKI infrastructure, which is required to do that type of thing. So there are a variety of reasons why, you know, it doesn't happen. But the tools and the services and the, you know, the kind of processes and policies are out there.
You mentioned education, and that was a question asked, and I believe the majority said that they were getting some sort of education, at least on the security policies within the organization.
Absolutely. 94%, I believe, was the number, actually, are educated. They know about the policy. But unfortunately, again, they feel as if in some cases, in order to get their job done, they really need to work around that policy. And again, I think part of the root cause is that you don't have the appropriate mix of security controls and policies to fit the various populations that are out there.
You know, some of the areas within this survey, it seems like these, I mean, we're talking about the vast majority of the people surveyed were in the financial services arena. You would think some of this stuff would be grounds for termination if this was ever discovered by the company. One of the issues was that was found through the survey was that employees are emailing business documents to their personal email address so they can access them.
Absolutely, and technically it is, but it's one of those things that if they enforced literally by the letter of the law, they probably wouldn't have half of their employees. And so that's not very practical. It's interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead. You had a question?
Well, in terms of technology, though, isn't the financial services industry, aren't they, and I'm talking about security technologies, wouldn't they be far and ahead many, many other industries?
They are. I mean, they tend to be very early adopters. And they will try various elements and various types of security. But, you know, they're not immune to the same pressures of other industries.
You know, at the top of this conversation, we really just talked about the overall takeaway, and that's, does it come down to just more education among the users?
I think that's part of it, but I think it's a number of things, right? I think it's got to start from the top down, from the notion of understanding what are the pressures that are important on our industry. Are they compliance related? Are they customer service? Are they revenue driven? You know, what are the goals that we have, and then how does that apply to the information, which is as Lockheed Martin said to me once, these are our treasures, right? You know, how does it apply to our treasures? Mm-hmm. How do we then sort that out and realize that not everything is created equal and we're going to take a different task on there? And then it moves into the IT organization where they say, okay, now let's assess what are the possible threats. And then working together between that higher level view, that business level view, and the technical view, how do we put policy in place which matches to the risk that we're willing to take to advance our business and the risk that we want to prevent threats. And then finally, you do need to have an education program. You do need to have potentially reward programs. I mean, I think of other things like total quality management or knowledge, knowledge capture activities or services-oriented architecture. Any of these really big activities, you need to take a holistic approach, I think, and think from, you know, the people, the process, and the technology are always the three elements, right?
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.